feel like a machine. So we know already very much. We know what Abhidharma means. We know the difference between Shastra and Upadesha. We know Mahasangikas have something called Petaka, which is not Abhidharma. Actually, and in Indian language, in Indian literature, we only have this Pali Petaka Upadesha, you know, but so nobody ever paid attention. Why is Petakopadesa called Petakopadesa? Why is it not in the Tipitaka? Things like that. So those questions could not be answered only with Indian literature. You also need Kumara Jiva in this case. And then he can explain your Upadesa. Today we look at the map. You have a map. And of course, India and the Indian cultural area. It's too big. Proportions should be more or less correct. And Buddha lived somewhere here, yes, in Bihar, present-day Bihar. The map I gave you is the map of this area. So it's of the northwest, yes? The map you have is the northwestern area. Because that is the area which is very important for new developments in Buddhism. And it's very important for Abhidharma, this northwestern area. Of course, the Buddhism in this northwestern area, this map, you can also find it here, you know, in the rest of it, in North India, it's also there. This is Mahasangika area, southeast is Mahasangika. So there you have the Petaka, there you have the Upadeshas, there you have the Nagarjuna, there you have the Mahasangika Buddhism in the south. And then Sri Lanka, the Buddhism in Sri Lanka, that's another problem. I can give you immediately my idea about Buddhism in Sri Lanka. You know, Buddhism in Sri Lanka, it comes from here, yes, from Patna. Pataliputra in the day of Ashoka. And his son, Mahendra in Sanskrit, Mahendra in Sanskrit, he went there to Avanti area. And then I think he went along the rivers. The rivers are Krishna and Godavari, those two rivers that go from this area down to the southeast. And here you normally take a boat and you go to Anuradhapura, to Sri Lanka. Yes? Probably that is the way he traveled. Nobody thinks much. Mahendra really flew, you know? Nobody could fly. Still today, nobody flies. Just try it outside. You'll see, you won't get from off the ground. He traveled. Then the next problem is, which road did he take? How did he travel there? The most logical way is, because we know he went to Avanti, let's believe he went to Avanti. You see, even then, you know, why if he flew all the way to Mihintale,
Yeah.
If he flew all the way to Sri Lanka, he should have flown from Patna to Sri Lanka, yes? To have the original Vibhajavada Buddhism in Magadha. But no, even Theravada agrees, he went to see his mother in Vidisha in Avanti area, you know. Now the next step is probably by boat, which is very common. Buddhism here is Mumbai. Yes? So in this area, Buddhism was very strong, and then they take a boat along the rivers to the southeast. Amaravati is somewhere here. You know, Amaravati is the capital of the Shatavahanas in the south. It's a very big place. It's Amaravati that has a Mahachaitya, has a big temple, and it's second century. Even the art of Amaravati has influenced Sri Lankan art in Anuradhapura very much. Everybody agrees with that. So it is quite logical to assume that the road leads through the rivers, along the rivers, Amaravati, and the culture of Amaravati, and take it down to Sri Lanka, to Anuradhapura. Yeah. That's what people now usually assume. There is another school of thought which says, because the traveling by sea is much cheaper than over land, so it may have taken a boat around here and along the coast. The boats, ship in those days, did not leave the coast very far. That it was along the coast. Why? Because you have fresh food, because it's not so dangerous, because you do not lose your way, and things like that. So there are many reasons why the boats would sail along the coast. So they say along the coast, and like that to Sri Lanka. But in that case, what about Amaravati? How do you explain influence of Amaravati in Anuradhapura? If the boat came that way, if that is the normal way, how can you explain Amaravati influence on Anuradhapura? You cannot. It's out of the way. Anyway, those are two explanations which you find these days. And people tend to look at the sea routes. As they say, it's cheaper. For the merchant, for the businessman, it's cheaper to go with his whatever he sells, along, take a boat, go down. It's cheaper than to take it across land. That's quite possible. But this is also by boat, you know. The river is also by boat. And Amaravati is not at the sea. Amaravati is inland. So those are the possible. There's one more argument. You know, the Chinese monk Xuanzang in the 7th century, he wrote a book after he went back about what he saw and whatever situation in India. And he said that here in the south, there was a tradition that Mahendra had stayed here in a monastery, that he had been living there for a short while. So he didn't fly there, yes? He probably took rivers and maybe a little bit down to the south, stayed here, took a boat. Many people did that. The connection between Sri Lanka and Tamil Nadu is quite well known, you know. Even Theravada people know this. Buddha Gosa went that way, Buddha Datta went that way, probably Dhammapala went that way. So they all took a boat in the south and went to Anuradhapura. It's even so that Buddha Gosa met Buddha Datta when he was back on his way back, you know. So they met along the way. So it's quite common road to take a boat here. Probably Mahendra also did that. And the Chinese monk says he stayed here, so that's one more argument. So here we have the Buddhism in the north, in the northwest. You have the map of the northwest. Here you have the Mahasanghika people. And then in Sri Lanka, in the old, probably you have the Stavidas, the Vipajavadis. Mahinda went there. Yes, he went there. But also other schools, not the Mahasanghikas. I don't believe Mahasanghikas went there very early. But Stavidas, Mahinda, and Vipajavada Buddhism went there. Yes. There's another thing. When Buddhism is here in the north, here is Tamralipti in Odisha, the big port where you can take a boat. So from Tamralipti you can take a boat and you sail along the coast. And you can also arrive in Sri Lanka. You can of course also sail here, you know, and then you are in Myanmar. Yes, that's also possible. Anyway, you sail along the coast. Here, Sir Vasudevadins took a boat and could go south. So, Sir Vasudevadins can also be found on this East India coast and in Sri Lanka. It's possible. And they can also take a boat from here to there, to Myanmar, and down to Malaysia, to Thailand, Malaysia, Sri Lanka, to Indonesia, eventually, you know. So you find Sarvastivada Buddhism along this road too, but it also went this way. And so that's the road. So what I'm saying is, main developments of Stavidas are here. And from here they could go there, they could go there. From here Mahinda went there, but mainly it happens here. And Theravada is a bit to the south. And why? I guess Theravada is opposed, let's say like this. You know, the first century BC, when it was written down, Buddhism was already there. The Mahinda was there, Sanghamitta, the sister of Mahinda was there. The sister of the nun who went to Sri Lanka, she took a boat, yeah, right? Yeah. With other nuns. She took a boat from here all the way to Sri Lanka. So you see it? This is a very common road to take from here. So her brother went there and then traveled that way, but she went like this. And So when she arrived there, and in the first century, after two centuries in the first century, there was always problem with mainlanders, no, with Tamils, Tamila, with always problem. They went to the island, invaded, made problem. When then the Sri Lankans became strong, and then they drove the Tamils out, and then after a while the Tamils came back, and so there is always this constant contact with the mainland, constantly. Also Buddhists, this is mainly Mahasanghika, but also Mahishasaka, you know that. Also Mahishasakas were there. We also know Mahishasakas were in Sri Lanka. In the fourth, about 410, the Chinese traveler gets Vinaya from Mahishasaka Vinaya there. So he was there. And even in Pali literature, we find traces of Mahishasakas. So Mahishasakas was there. I guess what happened is that at one time, first century BC, the Theravada people wanted to establish an orthodoxy, wanted to establish the truth. They had driven out the Tamils, and they were now, the king was restored, and the Sri Lankans were independent again, And they decided to write down the Tripitaka. Why did they do all that? Well, to establish the truth. If you establish a Buddha Bhasita Abhidhamma, that means you establish your truth, your orthodoxy. Because nobody can argue with that. If the Buddha said it himself, that's the end. You don't argue anymore. So if you have a Buddha Bhasita Abhidhamma, like Theravada has, this is the truth. It is orthodoxy. So there must be a reason to do that. Because as I said, some people here once did the same thing, and they also established their own truth with a different Abhidharma. It's also seven texts, Sanskrit, different. But anyway, it was different. So they established the truth, Buddha Bhasita Abhidharma, 1st century BC. At that time, we don't know if it was already in real Pali or not. We don't know. It is not mentioned in which language the Tipitaka was written down. Only the commentaries and the canon and the commentaries, but we don't know in which language this was written down. It's not mentioned. And as I said, Pali. Pali means sacred text. It's Pali originally does not mean a language. It is the language of the sacred texts. So first you have to have sacred text before you can have the language of the sacred text. So after the before the 1st century BC, you cannot have Pali as a language because there are no sacred texts yet. It's quite logical, right? So the 1st century BC, there you have this establishing of a truth, orthodox, Buddha Bhasita, Abhidhamma, sacred text written down. I believe all seven texts, Abhidhamma, were already written down in the 1st century BC, all seven of them. Although it is not mentioned how many. It is not mentioned how many, which ones, in which language and all that, that's not mentioned. So we only know that it was written down, and also the commentaries. And later after that, the commentaries and the texts, they were translated from the Sinhala Bhasa to Pali. But what is the Sinhala Bhasa? What was it? You know, Sinhala Bhasa, Sinhalese. So if you translate now Sinhala, I give you something to think about. If you have the word Sinhala Bhasa and you translate it, how do you translate? Do you translate the Sinhalese language, or can you translate a Sinhalese language? It's not clear if you use the Indian word. The Indian word is Sinhala Bhasa, and if you translate it, it can mean the
language of the Sinhala.
The, yes, or it can mean a language. There's a big difference. If you say the Sinhalese language, that's only one. That's probably the language of the locals. People speak in the villages. That's the Sinhalese language. But if you say a Sinhalese language, you have many more possibilities. That's any language which is used in Sinhala, in Sri Lanka. And so this Indian word Sinhala Bhasa depends on how you translate, and you can draw a different conclusion.
Is the Sinhala have a lot of meanings, even one word?
Yes, the Sinhala, the language, the Sinhala language. If you, as I said, if you say the Sinhalese language, that's one. That's the language as spoken in Sri Lanka, as the as everybody uses. To go to the market and whatever, no, this is the Sinhalese language. But if you say a Sinhalese language, and the Indian word can also be translated like that. If you say a Sinhalese language, there is more than one. The Sinhala, also, for instance, other Prakrit, which is present in Sri Lanka, can be also a Sinhalese language because it is in Sri Lanka and used there. So depending on how to translate, you have different conclusion, which is good, you know, because if you do not translate, you do not think about this. So if you do not translate, you say, that's it. And you do not think about one or more. What I mean that if it is correct to say a Sinhalese language, there is more than one language possible. And it could just well be the language used by Mahishasakas in Sri Lanka. That's also a Sinhala Bhasa. The language used by Mahishasakas in Sri Lanka is also a Sinhala Bhasa. Possible. It was there. And in that case, the Attakathas, the commentaries, were translated from the Mahishasaka language to Pali. By Buddha Ghosa, Dhammapala, and other commentators. Do you follow me?
We follow.
It's something new what I'm saying here. But if, as I said, if we keep repeating, that's very good. We should know what to repeat. But if we keep repeating, then no progress. No, we don't get any wiser, do we? We should be able to repeat and know, but that's not the end. That's the beginning. So when the Sinhala, we all agree, Sinhala Bhasa, it was translated from Sinhala Bhasa to Pali. Yes, that's what Buddha Ghosa did. And other commentators, they did that. That means that the original language was not Pali. But what was it? Was it Sinhalese, the local people language? Could be. Or was it a language which was in Sri Lanka, just like this Mahishasaka language?
What the language of the Mahishasakas?
Oh, that's the next question, and a very good question. In the south, I think it was almost Pali. It was very similar to Pali. In Sri Lanka, the language of Mahishasakas in Sri Lanka was almost Pali, very similar to Pali. I say in the south, yes? Because here were also Mahishasakas and they speak another language. They speak the local language. This is a Buddhist thing. Buddhists speak the local language. They do not use Sanskrit. So here there's the Mahishasaka language here is some northwestern Prakrit. But here it is almost Pali. It probably also comes from there. Maybe Mahinda took it there. Maybe the language of Mahinda was... Well, Theravada did not exist at the time when Mahinda arrived there. There was no Pali yet.
When Mahinda was arrived. The Pali there? Because when he went there, he met with the king and he had some dialogue with the king.
Yes.
But if the language was not that similar between king and the Mahinda, how they can communicate?
You know, as a king, they should have a translator, I think.
No,
and
practical, but anyway, let me do it another way. What is our oldest Pali text? The oldest in history, our very oldest, very first Pali text. What is it? Do you know? The oldest. There's nothing older in Pali than that text. What is it? Do you know it?
Nidana?
No, it's Dipavamsa. Dipavamsa is the story of Sri Lanka, yes? Dipa means Sri Lanka. Dipavamsa, it was written shortly after 350 AD. Shortly after 350 AD. Dipavamsa, the history of Sri Lanka. That's the oldest Pali text. That is quite late, isn't it? It is more than 500 years after Mahinda. 500 years later. We do not have anything older than that. And the language of the Dipavamsa is not even good Pali. It's very primitive, very simple, very a beginning Pali language, let's say.
So when the Pali the text was written down in the somewhere else, so what was the language of that?
I'm coming to that. That's true. I'm coming to that. So anyway, the oldest Pali is Dipavamsa, 350 AD, shortly after that, because the history of it stops in 350, so it was written shortly after that. 350 AD. That's the oldest. What I mean is, and I will answer your question, I hope. When Ashoka had his Sangiti in Patna, Pataliputra, that is the 3rd century BC, yes? That's Ashoka's time. Then his son took Vibhajyavada Buddhism. He did not fly there. Theravada say he flew just to say that it was very pure when it arrived here, yes? But actually, I'm sure he traveled. He went to Avanti. Vibhajyavada, he took Vibhajyavada to Avanti. He took it along here, took a boat, went to Sri Lanka. So Vibhajyavada arrived in Sri Lanka. Yes? So far so good, so far not a problem. But Vibhajyavada later also went there, you know. Went to other places too. Not, it also went to Gandhara, it also went to other places. When it was here, it was not Pali, but almost Pali. When Mahinda arrived in Sri Lanka, the language which he was using for his sacred texts, which were not yet texts, but spoken texts, the language of his spoken text was probably some mixed Prakrit, beginning with Magadhi and with the Avanti language and influences along the way, even some local influence from in Sri Lanka. It was mixed. The language was not pure Magadhi anymore. It started as pure Magadhi, but when it arrived, you had people join, people left, important people were very good, had great influence. So it was a language which was mixed, which arrived there. So now they say the language of the post-Ashokan period, the influence of Avanti is quite strong, very strong. There is an inscription in Gujarat, in a city called Girnar. It's almost Pali. So this is here. And then it went there. So the language which arrived here was something like Pali, but not completely Pali. Pali developed after that, in Sri Lanka. It was Buddha Gosa who gave the final, who made the final Pali language what it is today. It is and also Mahavamsa, by the way. Mahavamsa and Buddha Gosa, they really established Pali as we have it today. But before that, there was some growth, there was some development. When Mahinda came here, I think he used something very similar to Pali, but not completely Pali yet. It was the language of Mahishasaka, near Pali. We have a very strong argument. If you only study the Indian side, it's difficult to come to this conclusion. But if you use Mahishasaka literature in Chinese translation, this should also learn something, right? So if you use Mahishasaka literature in Chinese translation, we come to the conclusion that the Indian language was not completely Pali, but almost Pali. There are 4 texts which people say were translated in China. They even say they were translated from Pali. But the Venerable Dhammajoti established a few years ago certainly the language was not Pali, but very similar to Pali. He found that. I didn't find it, he did. And the four texts, which were written in a near Pali and translated to Chinese, are Samantapasarika, are Dhammapada, are Attakavagga, Sutanipata, one text, and Vimuttimagga, they say. Those four. Those four exist in Chinese translation. No, just right now. So it's the Samantapasarika. Samantapasarika, which is a Pali comment, a Vinaya commentary. They say the Pali is the work of Buddha Gosa, but now many scholars say maybe Buddha Gosa is a bit later than the Pali of the Samantapasarika. But Buddha Gosa is so famous, so many texts, even if he didn't write it, people say he did it. They say this is a normal development.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, tradition now says it's Buddha Gosa, but probably Buddha Gosa is a little bit later than Samantapasarika. But anyway, it's a good Mahavihara text. There is a Chinese version of this in 498 or 89. Forget. 489 or 98, made in South China. It made in South China. 89 or 98? Now I forget. No. End of the 5th century. This is true. made in Guangzhou, in Canton, in the south, the Chinese text. Then there is Dhammapada. I like the bird. There is Dhammapada.
Attakata or Dhammapada or pure Dhammapada?
Pure Dhammapada, only the verses.
Dhammapada
kata? No, only Dhammapada. 470, I forget how many verses. Yes? Gata. It's the Dhammapada itself. It exists in Chinese translation. And the Chinese translation was made in the 3rd century. And it also, we know, it arrived in China by boat. It came from here. it went there by boat.
It's translated in
South China.
In South China?
Yes. Also translated in South China. And the same person who is responsible for the Chinese Dhammapada is also responsible for the, well, you have different or Arthapada, they say, it has different titles. Anyway, it is one text in the Sutta Nipata. Attakavagga, in Sanskrit, you also have Arthavargiya. Some people say it is called Arthapada. So you have different titles because we really don't know the original of this Chinese text. We have a Pali text in the Sutta Nipata called Attakavagga. And we have it in Sanskrit. So there is this Chinese text, which was the work of the same translator as here, in the same place, so also in the south. And so this text both came from the south. Aya. Yes. And then. And the last one is, well, let's say Vimuttimagga. Oh, in Sanskrit it is Vimuktimarga, and in Chinese it is Jietuo Daowen. It's also translated, and it is translated in above, also in South China. Also in South China. By someone called Sangavarman, not Sangapala, Sangavarman. We have to reconstruct all those Indians' names based on Chinese. you know, because we do not have the originals, Indian text. So we have Chinese, and having this Chinese, we have to guess what is the original Indian name. And if you have the original, the Chinese say Sheng Qie Po Luo, many people say, oh, Sangha Pala. Sounds right, yes? But then we find other information saying this Sheng Qie Po Luo actually means Sangha armor, varman, or it means Sangha increase, growth, which would be Sangha Vardhana, you see? But if you have Varman or Vardhana, you, in both cases you have Var. So Polo is the Var, all right? So we have to look further, for further, more information than just the sound. We have to know what it means. And okay, so this Vimukti Marga, Vimukti is also translated in the 6th century. By someone called Sangha Varman. And this translator in the south of China, we know he comes from Cambodia. In Funan. Funan.
Sangha Varman and
Adam. Yeah, Sangha Varman is called Sangha Varman. this, yes. Because many people say Sangha Varman, but because the Chinese is Sheng Qie Po Luo. And Sheng Qie Po Luo sounds like Sangha Pala. And Sangha Pala looks like a very good Theravada word, yes? Many Theravada, Dhammapala, many names ending in Pala in Theravada. And it sounds good. But if you look at more information, it is not Pala. It is Varman. So his name is Sangha Varman. And in Southeast Asia, in Cambodia, also Thailand, and places like that, many names end in Varman. The king's names, many
Varman,
kings, yes, Jaya Varman, Rudra Varman, all Varman, all named Varman. Varman was a very common name, ending, names ending in Varman, very common. So also for the Sangha, so Sangha Varman is also possible. So Sangha Varman, coming from Funan, from Cambodia, he did that in South China. So we see all these four, all translated in the South. They all came by boat. And they all came from the 3rd century to the early 6th century. 512, I think, this last one. So to the early, from, that is the period of Funan. The 3rd century, Funan comes into history, and in the 6th century, Funan changes to Zhenla. But this is a, this is a, so the relations with South China are with Funan, coming from the 3rd century, yeah, that's these two texts, to the early 6th century, that's this one. Yeah. They all come by boat and they all are about the same period, Funan period. So we can say all those texts are coming from South India originally. Yes. Eventually via Funan. In Funan, they did not write new texts. The Funan Buddhist texts come from India. Nothing new in Funan. The Buddhists in Funan, their Buddhism comes from here. Even today, all the Indians in Cambodia and in Malaysia come from here. From China, they're mostly Tamil, by the way. So even today, they all come from here. So also in those days, they come from that same area. What I mean, and Venerable Dhammajoti established that this, the language of the Dhammapada, the original Indian language, looked very much like Pali, but was not completely Pali. So it could not have been Theravada, he says. He says it is probably Mahishasaka for this one text. For the other texts, we have some information too. Samantapasadika. In many ways, Samantapasa, the information given by Samantapasadika does not agree with other informations we have. It's very often not the same in Samantabhava, even in Pali Samantabhava. So what happened is, to come to the conclusion, I bet all of them are Mahishasaka texts originally, coming from here, by boat. And they went to South China by boat. And there they were translated. And their language was almost Pali, but not completely Pali, as Venerable Dhamma Jyoti has established. So they are, their language was almost Pali. And this is a good Theravada text. Good Theravada text. Sutta Nipata is a good Theravada text. Vimutti Magga also good Theravada text now. But at the beginning, maybe there are translations, Pali translations from, not from something else. Maybe Samantabhasadika is a Pali translation of a Mahishasaka, almost Pali text. This Dhammapada, maybe it is a Chinese translation of a text written in, not in Pali, but in a language which is almost Pali. And maybe this almost Pali was easy to translate to Pali, because the difference was not very great. Vimukti Marga, probably Mahishasaka meditation text, teaching us what to do. This is Abhidharma. Vimukti Marga is Abhidharma, you could say. And this was also written in almost Pali in the Mahishasaka language. And at one time it was rewritten, translated to good Pali in Sri Lanka. And then we have this Vimukti Magga. So originally the language of those texts was near Pali, almost Pali. So the Chinese translations make us clear that the Indian original of those texts is almost Pali, but not completely Pali. So the Pali texts are translations from that.
Okay, sir.
Yes.
Pali people use today is origin from Sri Lanka or India.
Pali, to put it in the most simple way, many scholars have already studied it. Pali language, they say it is a mixed Prakrit of different Prakrits together, mainly Avanti area language. But anyway, different Prakrit, a mixed Prakrit from the immediate post-Ashokan period. The period immediately after Ashoka could be his son. The period immediately after Ashoka, that's when Prakrit probably started. That's what linguists say today. It is a mixed Prakrit of the immediate post, means after, Ashokan period. That's what they say. That's the language they say. This is Pali. That's what they say. This is the linguists say so. It is not the language of Magadhawish full Lanka. This is Theravada says so, because if that is the case, it is pure Ashoka, right? It is pure Vimajavada. And that is what they want to establish with their Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma. No more discussion. But actually, there was discussion, that is why they established this thing.
But teacher,
yes.
This is the one question that you are saying, that when he went to the Avanti and he
yes.
was influenced by the local language.
Yes.
But main thing is that if he get the teachings from the Vibhajavadan teachers, if he moved from Avanti to the South India, how he can influence by the local language? Because he was just traveling towards
yes.
the one point.
True, but if he travels, people join him a certain way and people go away. I'm sure that the people who started are not the same people who arrived. Maybe some. But when you travel so far, from Patna to Avanti along the river and take a boat, when you travel so far, people will join your group. People will leave your group.
So can we understand like this way, sir? So in the ancient India, those travelers just prefer to enjoy the process on the way.
They could join.
Not have the fixed destination, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they that's very possible. So a lot of people influence them to each other.
Yes, I'm sure during Ashoka's period, his son went to Avanti to visit his mother. Yes, that's true. That's in Avanti. And so he stayed there for a while, and maybe he had, because he was the son of a king, you know, so many people with him, he was not alone. So many people joined, he had a probably a large group. And then he went this way, probably this large group, which left Avanti, probably, I don't know if it was the same, I guess not. The people could join, people could leave, people could decide not to join, could go as far as Amaravati, or could leave, whatever, you know. It's just, it was not one group leaves, same group arrives. It was not like that. So they arrive here. Of course, if departure time here and arrival time here, then it's the same group. Yes, but this is probably not what happened. That they really traveled. The language which comes here is already some mixed thing. So it started immediately after Ashoka, this Pali language, they say, with his son, Hinda, and it is the Vibhajavada language. True. And it started as Magadhi. True. But it probably did not arrive as real Magadhi. That's what they say. So Vibhajavada language is there. Now coming back to Vibhajavada, Mahishasika, when Mahishasika's Vibhajavada arrives here, this Ashoka kind of Buddhism arrives here, yes. But as I said, they also went there, you know. They went to different places, the Vibhajavadins. All at the borders of Ashoka's empire, you have inscriptions saying that there were missionaries there. So this Vibhajavada Buddhism went different places. So when the Vibhajavadins were all over India, from Afghanistan to Sri Lanka, when they were all over India, you could call them Mahishasaka, teaching the earth. So the name Mahishasaka is a name given to Vibhajavadins when they were all over India. That's easy to understand. Mahi Shasaka. Mahi being India. And what the next step here is, when the Vibhajavadins in Sri Lanka, being called Mahi Shasaka, they were also in South India. When the Tamils were driven out, the Sri Lankans decided to have their own orthodoxy, to go back to the real Ashoka kind of Buddhism, conservative, real, original Buddhism. So they decided to establish a new Buddha Bhasita Abhidhamma with the real Ashoka kind of Vibhajavada, according to them, you see. So what I'm saying is that Theravada is established in Sri Lanka as an orthodoxy to go back to the real Ashoka kind of Buddhism against Mahishasaka, because Mahishasaka had already some development against Mahasanghikas on the continent, against the others. They established their own true Ashoka kind of Buddhism with an Abhidhamma spoken by the Buddha. This is probably what happened, and what people now more and more say. 20 years ago, this was not the case. You know, we need the Chinese translations to know that the Mahishasaka language was almost Pali, because without that, we wouldn't know. Mahishasakas were in Sri Lanka. That is a fact.
But the Walapur Rahul completely denied that before arriving the Mahinda there was not any form of Buddhism. But it mentioned only the some form of Jaina practice and
Well, when did Buddhism arrive? Before Mahinda. Well, Mahinda is immediately Ashoka, post-Ashoka, because he was the son of Ashoka, which is the early 3rd century BC. What happened before in Sri Lanka? We don't have sources. We do not have text. Even for Mahinda, we don't have text. We do not have a 3rd century BC text. So we only have oral tradition. We do not have much information exactly when. Maybe a little Buddhism was already there. Yes. Maybe there was already some Buddhism in Sri Lanka when Mahinda arrived. Could be. Maybe that's why he went there.
But there is
I don't know. I'm not saying there was, but it's not excluded.
But there is some record in the Mahavamsa about the talking about the Mahavihara. If the Abhyagiri Vihara was there, I mean the Mahishasakas was there, so why they don't record about the Abhyagiri?
Abhyagiri was founded by the king end of the 1st century BC. So that Mahavihara was already there. So Mahavihara could be founded in the 3rd century BC, if possible. During Mahinda may have started this. It's possible. It's possible. Abhayagiri is later. It's a friend of the king. Someone supported by the king became the head of the new monastery in Anuradhapura, which called Abhayagiri. And very soon after that there was a conflict, but not at the start. Abhayagiri was not founded against Mahavihara. That's not true. Mahavihara and Abhayagiri were friends at the beginning. And very soon, some discussion started after that. So 1st century BC, end of the 1st century BC, Abhayagiri. But Abhayagiri is not against Mahavihara. Mahavihara is older. So this is probably what happened here. So what I'm saying is there is no Chinese text, no Chinese translation from Bali. From near Bali, almost Bali. Then they are Mahishasika texts, not Theravada texts. But the literature, the texts, the Mahishasikas and the Theravadins were very similar. Very similar. Their Vinaya is almost the same, but not completely the same, but very similar. And their Dhammapada, very similar. Not completely the same, but more than 90% the same. This Atakavagga, this Suttanipata text, if it is probably also Mahishasaka. We have not much information about Mahishasaka, so we have to get information about from what happened later. So it's Samantapasadika, many scholars have for a long time said, how come this Chinese Samantapasadika is sometimes so different from the Pali Samantapasadika? How to explain the difference? Then people say, now we know that the Chinese one is probably a Mahishasika one, which was rewritten, corrected, let's say, to the Pali Theravada text. That's why you have some differences. The original one in Chinese is probably Mahishasika, translated from a near Pali, almost Pali language. And the Pali one is later a correction, let's put it, of the old Mahishasika one. That explains the differences. So this is Vimutti Magga, very strange, isn't it? Vimutti Magga is a text which teaches us how to become arhat. Yes? It teaches us Vimukti. It is a shastra. So it teaches us. Now, if the Abhidharma, Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma does not teach us what to do to become arahat. Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma teaches us something. We learn more, we know more, our ignorance is less, but it does not teach us what to do. It instructs us, it makes us smarter, but it does not tell us how to meditate. Vimukti Marga does that. So this is a very traditional Abhidharma Shastra. See, if it is Mahishasaka, you immediately understand. If it is originally Mahishasaka, Mahishasaka had Abhidharma. And Abhidharma, they had Abhidharma Shastras teaching us what to do, how to meditate, how to become arahat. Just like Vimukti Marga. So original of Vimukti Marga, Vimukti Marga is probably also an Abhidharma Shastra coming from Mahishasaka. Chinese makes this clear.
So I think that the Samanta Pasadega original text was in the Pali.
Originally?
I think so.
Not it, when it was written down. So there is this Chinese translation translated from near Pali, from almost Pali, not completely Pali.
So I think that it was the original source, whatever they have translated.
The let me say the difference between Mahishasika and Theravada today, the difference is small. It's very small. Actually, if you want to gain, if you want to be famous, study Chinese and study the Mahishasaka Vinaya. Nobody ever did that in the world, not yet. There is no no study about Mahishasaka Vinaya, which exists only in Chinese. It doesn't exist yet. Mahishasakas are not, people have not yet studied very well. What I'm telling you is only the last couple of years, based on Chinese text, Chinese translations. Because the Mahishasakas, they say, they disappeared, completely disappeared in the 6th century, immediately, end of the 6th century. We do not find them anymore. Maybe a few here, but that's all. Mahishasakas disappeared. Dharmaguptakas also disappeared. So these schools, we find them in literature, but they disappeared quite quickly. So in Indian literature, we don't have much. And even if we have much in Indian literature, maybe the Indians lost it. Like they lose so many things. But the Chinese translations are still there. So the Chinese translations learn us very much about Indian culture and about Indian Buddhism, and the Indians themselves don't have it anymore. So anyway, I think this is, the language is near Pali, almost Pali, Mahishasaka language, and it was translated to Chinese, and this is a real Abhidharma text, Mahishasaka Abhidharma text, teaching us how to become arhat. Or in the Pali Tipitaka, there are more interesting texts. You know, Patisambhidha Magga. You know Patisambhidha Magga in the Kodaka Nikaya? Mm-hmm. People have always said, it's very strange, this Patisambhidha Magga. It looks like some Abhidharma text. So why is it not in Abhidharma? And then they say Abhidharma was already closed. 7 texts. It was closed. Yes? Closed. You can close it with number 8 too, you know. it's possible, you know. Yeah. So it's closed. So it's in Kodaka Nikaya. It's an Abhidharma text. But I think you can understand this situation if you think that maybe the original of Patisambhidha Magga is Mahishasaka text. Yes? Something like this is a Mahishasaka text teaching us Abhidharma what to do. And the Theravada people also took this text, made correct part, and I could only put it in Kodaka Nikaya. That would explain why Patisambhita Magga is Theravada, and in the Kodaka Nikaya. It comes, it is a corrected Mahishasaka text, let's put it like that. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
If you, this is what I'm saying, it's new developments, new things. But so far, everyone writes Patisambhita Magga is an Abhidharma text. Everybody says this. Okay, and then people stop. They're very, it's, oh, this looks like Abhidharma. It is Abhidharma. Good. That's the end. But actually, there are, that's the beginning of the questions. Yes? What is this Abhidharma text doing in Kodaka Nikaya? How did it come there? Why was it put there? And there are so many questions after that. So when we know it's Abhidharma, okay, that comes the next series of questions. And if you suppose it is a Mahishasaka Abhidharma text teaching us what to do, this is already answering a few questions, and this it is corrected to Theravada, correct Theravada. They can put it in the Kodaka Nikaya because this was not spoken by the Buddha. This Mahishasaka text could not have been spoken by the Buddha. So they put it in the Kodaka Nikaya, reword. It is still a Mahishasaka text which is very close to Theravada. The same tradition, more or less. Mahishasaka is also Vibhajavada. I said so. Theravada is, of course, Vibhajavada. So they're all, both Vibhajavada people, and they end up there. But then all the developments which I have been talking about today so far, this Abhidharma, this one, and Patisambhita Magga, which is, according to me at least, it is actually Venerable Dhammajoti study which started the thinking process, saying this is Mahishasaka. And then we get this Mahishasaka idea. So this is developing here. But the map you have is from here. And it is the northern. I think I have explained all there is to explain about the south. I cannot say much more. But all the different schools and other schools and the developments, they all take place here, especially here. Of course, they say this is a southern, south Buddhism. This is northern Buddhism. You all know south Buddhism is Theravada, northern Buddhism is Mahayana, they say, but that's not, that does not make much sense, really, because Sarvastivada is north. Sarvastivada is northern Buddhism. And Mahayana Buddhism, you find it here, with the Mahasanghikas. That's in the south. You see, so this north, south, saying that the south is Hinayana, the north is Mahayana, this, I don't know who came up with the idea. I don't know, maybe some Mahayanist wanted to show that he was better. than this Hinayana people. Hinayana is not very good, you know. The word Hina means low. It's not good. Bad. Hina, no good. Maha, everybody likes Maha. But nobody likes Hina. So it is probably a word which was found by some Mahayanists, yes?
Sure.
I cannot understand. I do not think it was a Hinayanist who had some big sense of humor. It's probably not like that. It is probably a Mahayana person, Mahasanghika person. Actually, the word Mahayana, as I said, was used for the first time by Mahasanghika, in a Mahasanghika, in a Prajnaparamita text. You know? So this is how it started. And then, and this, the word Mahayana is very common you find very often in India, in Chinese translations, Mahayana is a very common word. And the word Hinayana, you do not find very often. In literature, very few times only. If you find 100 times Mahayana, maybe you find 10 times Hinayana. So the difference is quite big. So the Mahayana, they say, we're Mahayana. We are the great vehicle. It's whatever. And it also started here, by the way. Prajnaparamita probably started here. Because the beginning of Prajnaparamita, there is also some discussion about that. Many people say in the south, because there are so many Mahasanghikas here, maybe it started there. But now more people say it started there. Anyway, it started in Mahasanghika circles. Looking at the map, let's look. It's already, we should maybe have a break.
Yeah.
No danger for the elevator.